Hello there, Crystal Miffers. It's Leslie and Mark. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. This week we're doing the second part of our elementals, although I was just saying to Mark before we recorded that I don't really have much on fire elementals, so we might just talk about other stuff. I don't know. What about you? All I've got is salamanders. That's well, we as we said before in the first elemental episode, that this guy said that each elemental is represented by a certain creature. So I did earth, and that was gnomes. And you had quite a lot for, what was it?
Air. I found
Air.
loads for air.
Yeah, you found loads for air. And then I was like, okay, well, we'll do fire. That sounds badass. And you're gonna do water.
Water, which I
And
seem to be loads for.
yeah, and then I looked at fire, and all I could find was salamander, and that's it. And there's not really much about the salamander. I mean, apart from maybe like why they thought salamanders were associated with fire, which is a really dumb reason, but I'll just say, like, they used to, I think it was like forest fires or something, or they would set fire to rocks for some reason. And when the rocks were on fire, they would find that a lot of salamanders would emerge from the rocks, so they assumed that that's how salamanders were born, or rather than the logical conclusion, which would be a
They don't
fucking
like
rock's on
fire.
fire, let's get out of here.
Yes.
Shit, we don't want to burn to death, so we'll just evacuate
I
or
mean, presumably other
yeah.
creatures were also moving away from the fire.
Well, yeah, but salamanders were the ones, so they assumed that salamanders were fire elementals, and they were the result, they were born from fire. And the salamander elemental, basically, if you're having trouble lighting a fire, say you're trying to light a fag or something with your lighter and it's not working, you would just call them on, you would call the salamander to help you out, and it would go, all right, here's some fire, now you can smoke a cigarette. And or it would protect you from fires as well. And basically that's it. That's all I could find out. So that's the podcast done. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
In
That's
all
it.
fairness, I started off looking at Undines, which we also discussed on the last one, because again, that's the Paracelsus guy that
Yeah.
sort of came
He's
up
one of
with the
them.
idea of elementals, but didn't really, but sort of did. But yeah, there's not really that much to say about them. They're basically,
What are they
it's
then?
basically just exactly the same as mermaids, but they're made out of water instead of, well, like they live in the water. But also they're made out of water. But other than that, it's just a mermaid.
This is what I found on occultpedia.com. I mean, it's very difficult to find any information about fire elementals. Salamanders are fire elementals. They are unseen intelligences who allegedly inhabit the element of fire. Paracelsus described salamanders as invisible beings of the fire. Okay. Belief in the existence of nature spirits is common to all cultures throughout history. They are said to have been here since the beginning of time. And created the landscape of reality. They're sometimes attached to a specific place, such as a tree, river, plant, or mountain. Like mountains have been the gnomes, I guess. Some are described as human in form, like we discussed last time. Others are animals, are half human, half animal. Yeah, okay. As the fire elemental, the salamander's domain are the forest fires, lightning, especially St. Elmo's fire. So I'm like, what's St. Elmo's fire? And it's other than a film, I
I would
think.
just have assumed it was the 1980s film and all
Yeah.
the cast were salamanders.
Who was in that film? Was it Denzel Washington? I think. I don't know. I've not seen it.
Was what's his name? Emilio Estevez in it as well?
Yeah, whatever happened to him?
I think he probably just realized that all the negative press of his brother being completely deranged and just stopped.
Maybe he
Which is
just
a
did
shame
it.
because it's not really his fault. He's got a crazy brother.
I mean, he was always my favourite out of the Estevez brothers. St. Elmo's fire. A group of friends just out of college struggle with adulthood. Oh, that's not what I thought it was about. And yeah, it basically stars the Brat Pack. So it's got Demi Moore as a character
Oh.
called Jules, Rob Lowe as Billy Hicks. It was made in 1985, so you're right about the decade. Andrew McCarthy, Kevin Dulles, Emilio Estevez, you're right. His character's called Kirby Keegar, Judd Nelson, Alec Newberry, Ali Sheedy. It's basically everyone from the fucking Breakfast Club. Mayor Winningham, I don't know about her. Martin Balls, Andy McDowell.
Is Mayor Winningham not the woman that plays all the older roles that Frances Conroy doesn't play in American Horror Story?
She was the doctor in Turner and Hooch. That's all I know. I don't know. I mean, I'm surprised you know who she is. Well done, you.
I mean, I might be talking absolute rubbish.
She was in American
Horror. I feel like Mayor's quite an unusual name.
All right, I think I might recognise her from American Horror Story, maybe. She was this one of the original Brat Pack. So it's basically, yeah, well, maybe that's where the Brat Pack it came from, because it said, as part of the original Brat Pack in Joel Schumacher's St. Elmo's Fire. So, yeah, she's been in quite a lot of stuff, but honestly, she's probably just one of those people that you're like, oh, her face seems familiar, but you don't quite know who she is.
Yeah.
One of those people. I'm trying to find out whatever film she's been in. I know this isn't really anything to do with Elementals, but I'm just trying to pad this out a little bit.
Maybe Mayor Winningham's in Elemental.
Maybe she is.
Maybe that's what it meant by they can be found in St. Elmo's Fire. It's because she's a fire elemental.
Exactly, yeah. I'm just scrolling through her like filmography here and I'm not really seeing anything that stands out to me other than Turner and Hooch. I don't really recognise anything else. Yeah, nah. She's obviously not one of the bigger ones of the Brat Pack that came out of it. Let's see who else is in this. I don't know who these people are, so I think I've just came with like the majority of them. But yeah, I've never seen this film. I don't know if it's any good. It's got a 6.4 out of 10 on Internet Movie Database. Someone says, it's not that bad. A comment on the Times. I suppose you could say that about any film.
I mean.
Let's see. Let's expand on this. Oh, here we go. Seven friends have just finished university and are starting out in their careers. They are having to come to terms with careers, having to be more responsible, to fend for themselves. And with all the decisions and issues life throws at them, some are coping better than others and some aren't coping at all. Let's delve deeper. So they are going, they're right, okay, they graduated. Right, so Alec, who aspires to political life, has just shown his true colours by changing his allegiance from Democrat to Republican, Mark. Which freaks out his girlfriend, Leslie, who he wants to marry. Who plays Leslie? I don't know. Let's see. I didn't see that. Oh, Ally Sheedy. Ally Sheedy's Leslie.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Poor man's Mayor Winningham.
Excuse me? She was like, see, that annoyed me about The Breakfast Club because her character was actually quite cool and goffy. And then by the end of it, they gave her a makeover and she was like this preppy girl. And she changed her whole like look, and apparently that was a good thing. And I'd say, no, it's not. No. Don't change yourself just to fit in. Anyway, so that's
the girl. I just want to keep making Mayor Winningham go. It's like Mayor Winningham would never change herself to fit in.
She wouldn't. I don't know. Wait, okay. So that freaks out her. She has an independent streak. She believes she has to make a name for herself. Well, she didn't in the fucking Breakfast Club, so just to find out who she is before she can truly commit to another person in marriage. But Leslie and Alec have decided to live together. Ooh, because Leslie refuses to marry Alec. He believes that justifies certain behaviour. Kirby, who is a big pink character who swallows people and then gains her superpowers, wants to become a lawyer.
All Kirby has to do to become a lawyer is swallow a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. He just sucks them off and then he becomes a lawyer. And he pays for his schooling by working as a waiter, as in he sucks off a waiter and gains her waiter powers, at their local hangout called St. Elmo's Bar, hence the name of the movie. Struggling writer Kevin, so Kirby and Kevin are roommates. They are on the opposite extremes of the romance spectrum. Kirby.
One of them's gay and one of them straight.
who's the gay and who's the straight here? Kirby? I think he's going to get the gay one, maybe. I don't know. Well, we'll find out. Kirby has just reconnected with Dale Bieberman, a slightly older woman he knew in college, who is now a doctor. I assume that he swallowed her. He's madly in
love. Dale Bieberman is a terrible name for a character in a film.
Yeah, he's madly.
Not that Kirby's a great name, but Dale Kirby Bieberman.
I'm just confused why there's a guy in this called Kirby. Like, Okay, I can't just, all I can think of is Kirby the Nintendo character, because that's who Kirby is. He's madly in love with the older woman and will do anything to impress her. Kevin, on the other hand, doesn't date and states he doesn't believe in love, making his friends speculate that he's a closet homosexual who's secretly in love with
Kirby's
Alex.
gay.
Well, not really. I mean, just because he's not dating anybody doesn't automatically make you gay.
Maybe Kirby's ace and his roommate's a slut, and I just went the wrong sexual opposites.
Okay. Kevin will eventually open himself up to the one friend who matters the most.
Yep.
Billy, married with a child, is the irresponsible one of the group who would rather sleep around and play the saxophone. It's so 80s, isn't it? Then face it. Yeah, what?
Billy, who's married with a child, is the irresponsible one of the group.
Yeah, I know.
He sounds like he should be the responsible one.
Yeah, because he's actually, like, the rest of them are all, like, just living together, or, you know, like, they're not actually have a family and stuff. So how does that make, yeah, you're right, how does that make him the irresponsible one? Is it just because, well, he is kind of irresponsible because he's cheating on his wife and plays the saxophone. What a scandal. Then, is he playing the saxophone thing?
Maybe he's one of those people that leaves the baby outside the shops all the time.
Does he busk outside with his saxophone trying to, like reel in the ladies, or
and then wanders off and just leaves the baby. Mm-hmm. I left my scarf when I was out yesterday, but that's not as bad as leaving a baby.
You left your scarf where? Where was Miff Child?
Why is it his job to clean, to sort my mess?
You should be making sure that, you know, as an older gentleman, that you should be kept in your place.
That's
and
true.
You know where all your stuff is. Just saying, you have to look after the elderly. Isn't that why you have kids?
I went to put it on this morning and was like, I can't think where I hung it up when I got in last night, and then I thought, I bet I didn't actually bring it into the house with me, because that's very me.
So he'd rather play the sax and face the realities of being an adult with family commitments. I mean, he could still play the saxophone and have family commitments, I would argue.
That's true. Lisa Simpson, she's very responsible. She plays the saxophone.
He still lives for the memory of his fraternity glory days. Virginal? And sheltered Wendy, who comes from a wealthy family. That's your, what's her name? Winnie?
My hero.
Mayor. Is it Mary or Mayor? Mayor as in a horse.
I think it's Mayor as in a horse, yeah.
Yeah, so she's the Virginia one. So does that mean she is a virgin, or she's just, like, chaste? Right, so she's sheltered. She comes from a wealthy family. She works in a low-paying social services job. She comes from a wealthy family, I guess then being in a low-paying job doesn't really matter, because her family probably provides her. Yeah, her family provide her with all her financial needs. She is in love with Billy, the irresponsible one, who in turn takes advantage. She likes a bad boy, I guess. This is so cliched. Who takes advantage of her adoration of him. And most are concerned about Jules, who works in a bank, lives a life of excess in all facets, and doesn't have the financial means to live that lifestyle. She works in a bank. I thought that'd be quite a well-paying job. You know, I mean, she's just one of the...
Also, we don't know how extreme her lifestyle is. Maybe she buys like 9 grams of coke and 7 tiaras every afternoon.
She has 10 saxophones. The question for all 7 becomes whether their friendship can survive adult real life. To be honest with you, it doesn't sound like a great film. Who plays a responsible one? I'm gonna guess it's Andrew McCarthy's Kevin. Is that the closet homosexual?
No, Kevin's the slut that lives with the closet homosexual. Kirby's the closet homosexual.
No, that's the other way around.
Oh, is it the other way around? Kirby's the slut.
Yeah, Kirby's the one that's banging some older women, and Kevin's his roommate, who they all think is.
And the older woman's called, like, Bob.
I don't know.
Bob Beaverlegs or something like that. Dr. Bob Beaverlegs.
Bieberman. Yep. That's Andy McDowell. So Andy McDowell's the older woman. I didn't think Andy McDowell was that old in 1985, but okay.
No, sure.
Rob Lowe is Billy.
Ally McDowell is a sexy older woman now. Like, if you're making a film this year.
Rob Lowe is Billy. All right, so Billy is the one that's the saxophone playing guy in it. And yeah, he does dress like he's still in college with his 80s hair and his earring, and he's sort of George Michael look. But yeah, Rob Lowe. He is quite handsome, but he's also very skeezy. Right, well, that's it then.
We're talking about...
Exactly. So how old would she be in 1985?
I wouldn't have thought she'd be 65 now, though. She looks great for 65. I don't know. I don't know what year it is just now. Where are we? 2024?
Well, she's about 65. Like, in the 80s, my parents were in her 20s. So she must have been in her early 20s when she made that film. So I'm assuming that all the rest of them were sort of in her teens. Who cares? Why are we talking about this? I guess instead of Elemental.
Because everyone in the cast of St. Elmo's Fire is a salamander.
Yeah, that's right. Right, back to the little occult thing I've got here. Right, so where were we? Right, St. Elmo's Fire is actually their forks of flame on the masts and the rigging of ships. That's what that is. Have you heard of that before?
Weirdly, I have, because it fits in with one of the things that I looked at.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't know that they were called St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah, light and fiery orbs, volcanoes, fire, and anything else to do with fire, really. Even just like the light of a fire that comes off a match, or like I said, a lighter, or anything like that. Manly P. Hall. Manly P. Hall? That's his name. And has the secret teachings of all ages describes thus the salamanders. He says, quote, medieval investigators of the nature spirits. I like, that should be a show. Medieval investigators of the nature spirits. Like the sort of medieval Mulder and Scully type thing where they just
starring
go investigate Mayor elements. Yeah, Mayor Winnie. Starring Mayor Winnie. Of St. Elmo's Fire. We're of the opinion that the most common form of salamander was lizard-like in shape. No shit, Sherlock, because that's what salamanders are. A foot or more in length. As visible as a glowing uradella. I don't know what a glowing uradella is. Twisting and crawling in the midst of the fire. Another group was described as huge flaming giants in flowing robes, protected with sheets of fiery armor. That sounds cool. Certain medieval authorities, among them, the Abbey de Villiers held that Zarathustra, or Zarathustra, was the son of Vesta. As we said in our Greek or Roman episode, Vesta is the goddess of the hearth and the goddess of fire. I suppose they did light an eternal flame for Vesta, the Vestal Virgins. But they believed that she was... What? That doesn't make any sense. So they thought that Vesta was the wife of Noah? That wasn't in the Bible. Who was the wife of Noah? Did he have a wife? Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did.
What was his wife's name? In fact, did she even have a name in the Bible?
No, I don't think she was named in the Bible.
So I guess he just filled that gap in with saying it was Vesta. And so he was the son of Vesta and the great salamander Oromasis. So you're saying that the son of a goddess, or the goddess banged a lizard and birthed a son. Well, I mean, I suppose you could count that as a royal family. I mean, there's been weirder conspiracies going about of late.
There have, yes.
Hence, from that time onward, undying fires have been maintained upon the Persian altars in honour of Zarathustra, flaming father. I feel like Zarathustra sounds like some sort of porn actress, or maybe like, and now Zarathustra, and then she starts pole dancing and popping things out of her vagina.
Yes,
because her name's Zarathustra. She's a top stripper. And one of the most important subdivision of the salamanders were the Afeniki. These creatures appeared only as indistinct globes. They were supposed to float over water at night and occasionally to appear as forks of flame on the masts and rigging of ships, hence the St. Elmo's Fire. The salamanders were the strongest and most powerful of the elementals and had as their ruler a magnificent flaming spirit called the Djinn, terrible and awe-inspiring in appearance. The salamanders were dangerous and the sages were warned to keep away from them. Who are the sages? Are they like wizards?
Yeah, like really smart old people.
Okay, really smart old people, like a bit like ourselves. Sage Mark and Sage Leslie, as the benefits derived from studying them were often not commensurate with the price paid. As the ancients associated heat with the south, this corner of creation was assigned to the salamanders as their drone, and they exerted special influence over all beings of fiery and tempestuous temperament. So if you're an angry person, then you're a fire elemental. You've got the salamander in you. Rawr. In both animals and men. So if you've got an angry pet, it's a fire elemental doing it. The salamanders work through the emotional nature by means of the body heat, the liver, and the bloodstream. So if you told me that, that's where the term "my blood is boiling" comes from.
Wow.
Without their assistance, there would be no warmth. Paracelsus says salamanders have been seen in the shapes of fiery balls or tongues of fire running over the fields or peeking in houses. Not what I imagine
Paracelsus would sound like.
Well, that's exactly how I imagine he sounds like. So there. So you have to do the same voice if you're doing Paracelsus.
Okay.
In medieval times, the conjuration and exorcism of elementary spirits was practiced extensively. Were they? The crystal being a preferred mean of evoking.
Were crystal of evoking beings?
Them. No, they mean the actual crystal, like a crystal. They use crystals to evoke them. So if you've got crystals, that's how you evoke the elementals. But yeah, we're crystal beings because we're crystal myth, of course. In every instance, a special consecration of the four elements was a principal and essential part of ceremonial procedures. And that's pretty basically it. But then there's a link to the jinn. So what the fuck is a jinn? Or is it just the jinn genius? That's where that word comes from. Yeah, it's basically, it harks back to like what you were saying. Why does it always go back to the jinn? That's weird. Like, see, in the last elemental one you spoke about, the air being
the one went back to the jinns.
Yeah, the genii or jinn in Babylonian demonology, that's where they originated. They participated closely in the everyday life of human beings, although they themselves were invisible and superhuman. Good jinn were called shedu or lamassu and would act as guardians, although they required proprietary rights, whatever that is. In Arab folklore, the jinns are sort of elementals, Arabian spirits, perhaps animalistic, although by most accounts they are fearsome and usually portrayed as monstrous demons. Evil jinn, called edemu, were said to be the souls of the dead who had not been properly buried. According to myth, the jinn were created out of fire and populated the earth for many thousands of years before Adam and Eve. They were perverse and vicious. I quite like that. I'd like to be described as perverse and vicious. That's quite fun. Put that in your yearbook. And would not reform, although
put prophets... that in your yearbook.
Were sent to, or put it on your CV. You know, if you're not in school, say, personality-wise, I'm perverse and vicious. Exactly what you need for this company. And I'm refused to reform. So of all prophets were sent to try to salvage them, unrepentant, they were eventually driven from the earth and took refuge in the outlying islands of the sea. The jinn are not immortal, but destined ultimately to die. They eat and drink and proliferate their species, living in communities with rulers and ranks. In Roman mythology, harkening back to our last episode, they were the tutelary spirit that attended a man from cradle to grave. That's not something I've seen in my research, but okay. Governing his fortunes and determining his character and also wishing them to enjoy pleasure in life. So a sort of ancient Roman guardian angel, or what is that? The conscience from Pinocchio type of thing. I don't see what's wrong with that. I quite like the idea of having a jinn. Or is it only men? Because it says a man. So women don't get a jinn, do they? But there are female jinn.
But people just didn't care because everyone was sexist. If you were
they were extremely sexist.
My jinn has told me, people would be like, oh, shh, nobody cares.
Shh, you be quiet now. To indulge one's genius was to indulge in all of life's pleasures. Genius or genii were only for men. Oh, was it now? Women's genius counterpart were called Juno. Another common belief was that each man has two genii, one good and one evil. So hence, you know, like the classic devil on the shoulder, angel on the other. These Roman genii beliefs were somewhat similar to our beliefs in guardian angels. Yes, because the Romans, when they changed from paganism to Catholicism, essentially just brought that shit over into their new mythology. So hence, guardian angels are just djinns. Not surprisingly, the Eastern genii were not attendant spirits, but instead fallen angels under the command of Azazel, afterwards called Iblis or Eblis, not Idris Ebra. A lot of people wouldn't mind him being their personal guardian angel.
Yeah.
The story goes that Azazel was carried off as a prisoner by the angels after they were banished from Earth. He then grew up amongst them and eventually became their chief, but refusing, when commanded by God, to prostrate himself before Adam. Good for you, I wouldn't do it. He was degraded to the condition of a shaitan or shaitan, and becomes the father of the shaitans or devils. That's pretty much the jinn, according to that website. And basically that's all I have on fire elementals. What do you think of that then?
I mean, again, as with all things we look at, it's quite cool, and I like that Christianity was like, this is quite cool, but evil!
Yeah. You can't have a guardian angel telling you you can have a lot of fun. No more fun for you. They're evil now, so get rid and do what the Pope says instead. He'll tell you what's fun. He'll tell you how to live your life. Not the jinn. I prefer the jinn. But these aren't like one. Yeah, well, you can have one. I can't.
You don't know that for a fact, though. Well, you might still be allowed to have one.
What if I identify as a man? Do I still get a gin?
I guess yes.
Okay. There's a loophole. Let's get back to elementals.
Soggy elementals.
Soggy biscuits.
Yeah, so as you were saying, same when I looked at the air one, I managed to find lots of stuff that Paracelsus's work was based on, but the water one, not really. Not even really mermaids. I found a couple.
Well, isn't that who they said, what is it Paracelsus said, were an elemental or mermaids? Water elemental, was it mermaids?
They're undines, but undines are basically mermaids, except
right. Or sirens? Are they?
They've like got fish tails and human upper bodies, but they're actually made out of water. That's the only difference.
Right, and are they invisible as well?
Yeah. Well, they're invisible when they're in the water because they're made out of water.
Oh, well, fair enough, yeah.
You can't see them. So it's very similar to the air ones. Okay. And there wasn't really any, like, interesting stories about them. But I did find stories about... Well, one of the things that I looked at was the squonk, but I think we might have talked about that on here before.
We've spoke about the squonk. I love the squonk. That's the creature that's a crypto, it's a cryptic creature, and you came up with that. Well, you didn't make it up, you introduced.
Yeah, I thought it was, when I looked at it, I was like, I'm sure I've covered this before, so I'm not going to take proper notes on it.
It's like a little haggis looking thing.
Yeah.
And it cries itself, and to the point it dissolves away if you upset it.
Yeah.
It's just really sad. You've got to keep it happy. Keep the squonks happy. Keep the squonks happy. I want to get a placard and just march about saying that.
But I thought that's kind of similar to an undine, because if it can cry the water out of its body and not exist anymore, that implies that its entire body is just water.
I suppose it would be, yeah.
And then I found two that actually are very similar to it. So the Achre and the Imibozu.
Imibozu.
Yes.
Right.
You won't like the Imibozu.
Why?
Heads up. In fact, yeah, well, I'll do the one you won't like first, then I'll do the one you will like.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Imibozu, what is it?
Just call it Imibozu.
Imibozu. So the Imibozu is basically this Japanese belief that there are these huge, kind, roughly human shaped creatures. Oh, no. That are made out of dark water, but they're like human shaped roughly, but like really, really freakishly tall and slim. And right. Instead of having bodies made out of flesh, their bodies are made out of like dark, like deep waters. So they look almost like black because the water that they're made out of is the water from the very depths of the ocean.
So it's like a really tall, creepy shadow person.
Yes.
But liquid form. Okay, I get you. What did he do though?
So they're regularly spotted off the coast of Japan. There's been loads of reported sightings of them that go back as far as at least the 1700s. But there's things that seem very similar that go back to about 600 AD. So basically...
This might be controversial, Mark, but when you think of Japan, you think of earthquakes. And then when you think of earthquakes in Japan, you think of tsunamis. So maybe, like, obviously the big tsunami that happened recently, I don't know when that was. I think it was quite recent. Is it 2008?
I do know the one you mean, but I don't know what...
Yeah, but obviously, the Japanese have been dealing with earthquakes since the beginning of...
Well, they do have, like, a mythical being that is the being of, like, tidal waves and tsunamis and things like that, but this isn't the same thing, so it's not it's not like it's coming up, like... it's not, like, big and broad and coming up like a wave... Basically, they think like you can't see them in the sea because same as the undine, they're like made out of water. But when they come up, so basically they burst out of the sea. Also, I don't like this, but when they burst out of the sea, they all like one of them bursts out or multiple of them burst out and they start heading straight towards sailing vessels, going yah, 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 yah as they move, which is weird. And the very large ones specifically attempt to sink ships. So it's kind of like being hit by a wave because they keep throwing themselves on your boat, trying to capsize it. They also always...
I call upon the fire salamander to...
That's what I was going to say. They always try to put out all the fires on the ship, the fires that like guide you at night, which we've now learned are called St. Elmo's fires.
Yes.
But there are also tales about ones that are like about human size, like maybe slightly bigger than a normal man, like 6.5 feet. Where there'll be like groups of them that will climb on board the ship while you're sailing, making that weird yah 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 noise. And they climb aboard the ship and basically wreak havoc. They try to put out all the St. Elmo's fires so that you can't see where you're going and try to cause you to crash on the rocks. They try to attack the sailors on the ship. The only way to get rid of them is you have to produce enough smoke that they'll start to flee, and you'll be able to tell when you're producing enough smoke because they'll stop making their terrifying noise and instead they'll start going, which I think is also a terrifying noise, as they flee back into the water. There's still modern sightings of them. So there was one that was like a really famous one that was on the news like in Japan in the 1970s. So in the April of 1971, there was an apparent attack by Umibozo off the coast of Onagawa. Mm-hmm. A fishing boat, the 28th Konpira Maru, was traveling to New Zealand from Japan to fish for tuna when the boat's long lines were all suddenly cut, and the people on board claimed that a large, skinny creature made out of dark water surfaced out of the water. It had grey and brown wave-like lines all over its body, and it had a space that were almost eye-like that were about 15 centimetres in diameter. Its face had like an inverse of a nose, but it didn't have a mouth. Half its body remained in the water, but the rest of its body was obviously coming out of the water, and it was basically like splashing at them. The group then turned their harpoon on it, but it said that the harpoon just passed through it the way it would walk.
That was what's going to happen. Why did they think that they could harpoon it?
But they weren't that far offshore, so there was also people on the shore that had reported the same thing, where they were like, there's some sort of gigantic creature trying to sink a ship. This was reported to the police. The person who was put in charge of it was Enyo Susan Kenkikyo.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that it was likely that there was some large organism, such as a very large fish or a whale, that was a bit too close to shore, and the sailors and the people on shore had mistaken it for a monster. However, the eyewitnesses that saw it said, well, it didn't look anything like
a whale.
A whale, and it certainly didn't look like a large fish. So,
what happened? Did it just go away, or did
yeah,
they elaborate
basically we
on...
kept shooting at it. It kept trying to splash into the boat, and then because they were in shallower water, although all the lines and stuff broke, it eventually just like sunk back into the sea and then was gone, because again, it's apparently made out of water, so once it's in the water,
I don't know. I'm starting to think, although they do sound really terrifying and scary, maybe they are just trying to protect the whales and the fish and the tuna, and they're just like guardians of the sea. So you have to look vicious and defend yourself, or defend your realm.
And maybe they just say, yeah, because they are lord.
They are lord.
Yeah, lord. Yeah. Stop killing the tuna. Yeah.
Or they're German. Yeah.
Also, Lord would be in the sea in between New Zealand and Japan, because that is where she hails from. And her hair is like jet black waves.
It is.
They're Lord.
And I haven't heard or seen her for a long time.
I've never seen Lord Anne and Umibozo in the same place at the same time.
She is the queen of the Umibozo Lord. Yeah. Right, you won me over they've sort of won me over a little bit, although they are terrifying, because I don't like the idea of them just suddenly popping out of the sea, like really tall fin things. That is scary. And I'm going on a cruise this year, so hopefully they'll fuck off away from, like, they'll just stay in Japan and not come near the Atlantic Ocean. Anyway, I'll just say, look, I'm cool. I've got nothing against... Okay, yeah, I'm on this cruise ship, but it wasn't my decision. I'm trying to negotiate with them. I don't think they would understand. I like whales. I like tuna. I'm not going to eat them. I do eat tuna, to be fair, so they probably would have beef with me.
They would not be a fan.
No. All right, what's the other one? The one you said that would be less scary?
The Achre. So they're like a really old... like from the first settlers in Scotland, but they're what Loch Achray is called after, which is one of the smaller lochs in Scotland.
Oh, I didn't know that. I've never even heard of that loch.
I've never heard of them until, and to be fair, this is the only two interesting things I found researching this, but yeah, so they're like the original settlers from Loch Lomond, or that lived around Loch Lomond.
To be honest, those islands, right, have you ever been in one of the islands in Loch Lomond?
No, I've not. I've only
they
ever
are
been
quite creepy.
In the shore.
Well, David and I rented a rowboat and we rowed to one of the islands near Rowardennan or Balmaha. I think it was Balmaha, but we rowed quite far and we went to one of the wee islands that dotted around Loch Lomond. We got on it and there was no one there. And then in the middle of the island, we found gravestones.
Okay. Not where I saw that going.
And it turns out that that's where the McGregors buried some of their clan. And yeah, I just found it overall a very weird and creepy place. And there was quite a lot of ticks about, so I just wanted to get off the island as soon as possible. So we went back onto the robot and just rode back to shore to safety. I just felt like I was intruding on their sacred land or something. Like,
well,
Native
when
American.
They were alive,
yeah,
they would have believed in Achre, which again, I like when you find like an old Scottish mythological creature that I'm like, I've never heard of this before.
Well, it makes me think of Will-o'-the-Wisps. They could be fire elementals.
Well,
you know how
these
said...
are kind of like, they're almost like Will-o'-the-Wisps, but they're made of water.
Right. Okay.
So they're made entirely of crystal clear water, and they live in the lochs around Loch Lomond. But obviously, same as we were saying about the other ones, you can't really see them because they're made of water and they live in the lochs. Mm-hmm. They can sometimes be seen walking on the water, but they can't leave the loch that they're in, because if they go on to land, they basically dry up and cease to exist.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
There are stories of the settlers that lived there trying to catch them and communicate with them, but which is not surprising. Strangely, they didn't speak Gaelic. They spoke their own Achray language. They were like, do you understand this? And they were going, I am Lord. Yeah, instead of just making one sound, though, it was described like they would talk to each other, but you couldn't make out what they were saying and they couldn't make out what the humans were saying. It was also, so they also believed that they're extremely hot to the touch. Anyone who reported having come into physical contact with one said that their skin would bubble and blister where they touched it. So they're really made out of like crystal clear boiling water.
That's weird.
And then there's like apparently ghostly sightings of like glowing women walking on the water at Loch Lomond. But people believe that if the Achri are real, it's really just them because they're roughly like human shaped. And although they're crystal clear, they emit a faint glow around about their bodies, which means that if you saw one walking on the water at night, it would just look like there was some glowing woman on the water. Therefore, people would be like, ghost, but actually not ghost. Achri.
I like that. Are they like the guardians of the loch then, do you think?
Sort of, but it was more like when they settled they there, they were like, these are the people of this area. Like, this is what... Like, rather than being humans that travelled out of Africa, it's like one of the original peoples of Loch Lomond where water creatures.
It reminds me of Anne Rice's, the novelist, the Taltos. I don't know if you've ever read those series, The Witching Hour, the Mayfair Witches.
No.
She created this. Maybe she read into it because she said the Taltos, who were these kind of elemental creatures that are like, they weren't humans, but they were humanoid. And they were very tall and wispy, kind of magical. And they lived in the Highlands of Scotland before humans were there.
Well, there you go.
Could be a similar thing.
Yeah, sounds very Achri-like.
Yeah. And when I went to that wee island, it did feel weird. I would recommend you go and, like, I don't know if you want to take the myth child there, but just, like, row over there and find those graves, because it's strange. Well, I would suggest you wear tight clothing, though, because you don't want ticks getting at you.
Disgusting. I see as though lots of people like ticks. Unlike most people, I don't like ticks.
No. It'd be a bit weird if you like ticks to bite you.
Yes. Ugh,
imagine being covered in ticks.
That would be quite the strange fetish.
Yeah, will-o'-wisps, I was thinking. Or, you know how, I don't know, I watch a lot of ghost paranormal hunting shows, and a lot of the times when they're out at night in sort of wooded areas, people say that they see globes of light, like balls of light just floating about, and then they just suddenly disappear. That could be a fire elemental and not a ghost. So that made me think of that when you were talking about St. Elmo's fire and like balls of lightning and things. Ball lightning, again, is supposed to be a fire elemental. But scientifically, it's just ball lightning. It depends how you look at it. From the viewpoint of science or the viewpoint of a sage, a medieval authority.
I try to look at everything from the viewpoint of a medieval sage.
Yes, me too. I find it makes life much more fun. And I don't know. What do you think of elementals overall, Mark? Because there's not really much to say about. Yeah,
I like them overall. Going back to our previous one where I was kind of like, I want them to be a really cool, sexy superhero team. Like, I feel like these guys could be in it. I mean, I'm saying that
the Captain Planet.
Well, it's kind of sexy. So actually. There we go.
I like
Mayor Winningham, Lords, and some sort of glowing Scottish women. Charlene Spiteri. They can join the team.
I like to think that they all originated from Scotland. I know that because I'm just biased that way and proudly Scottish. So all the elementals come from here because our country is the best, of course.
I do think, though, that is the interesting thing, that the things that he came up with, which is his face, paracetamol,
Paracelsus.
That's him. Like, it is interesting that they do exist in all cultures. And then if you look at like the Achri, it's interesting that the first people to settle in Scotland were like, oh, they're the people that already live here. Which I get could be wherever they came from, they had already stories of water elementals and then they carried the story there and stuff. But that's not the way I'm reading it. I'm just very like, that kind of implies to me that there are.
Yeah, but then maybe they evolved into things like Selkies and Kelpies And because they were like water spirits.
Yeah.
Remember I spoke about them, and then also like will-o-wisps and other, but I don't know where brownies was a Scottish thing, so that's like the elemental of the earth, gnomes. So you're right, every culture has their own version of
and they
an
all
elemental
seem
thing.
similar enough, which is interesting.
Do you think that they were birthed with the Big Bang, when the Big Bang happened? Could be that they're the first sort of things that existed before organic life.
Maybe.
I actually would buy into that. Like, they're the most ancient, oldest part of the universe or Earth that was created.
Yeah, it makes just as much sense that, like, organic matter would evolve to think that.
Well, we don't know much
about
that.
That makes as much sense to say, well, water could evolve to think, like, who says it couldn't?
We don't know much about dark matter. That could be another type of elemental that we have no fucking clue about. We're still looking into it. And apparently dark matter is everywhere, but we just can't see it. Again, it's something that we can't see, which again goes into the whole elemental thing. So I think that really interesting. I want to know more about dark matter, but again, we could, but again, yes, but is there something really missed about dark matter? It's more a scientific myth.
I like when we do an episode where we just talk about like things that actually definitely exist but are weird.
Yeah, and yeah, okay, add it to the list then, that's fine.
I have, it's on. There we
go. I feel like that's about it. That's all we say about elementals, so what else do I talk about? No.
We can just have this as a wee short one.
Yeah, exactly. All our episodes don't have to be like an hour and a half. I mean, we've been recording for nearly, 56 minutes now? So we could just sort of wrap it up.
Yeah, it's basically episode length.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's choose the next topic then when we're talking about the list.
Pick a number between 1 and 41.
Wow, it's getting bigger every time. I'll go 40 because I'm 40 this year.
Okay, number 40 is dreamwalking.
Ooh.
Oh, indeed.
Dreamwalking, what is that? We'll find out next week when we... No, we're not recording next week because...
Well, neither we are, because neither of us can record next week.
Well, I'm going to another podcast, live show. Not that we've ever done one, because we haven't, we're not that big. But I'm going to see how did this
we
get
should
made.
Just do one in the park one day.
We should, yeah. We've said this before, just do one random. We should go to Calder Glen and go on their stage and just do our own podcast there. And just see who shows up to listen. We maybe live stream it around the world. Maybe we should just go on Twitch or something and just live stream our podcast from there. I don't know how to set that up, but we could. But I don't really want to show my face, to be honest with you.
No.
Do you?
I like my face being private.
Yeah. Although I was on one of our pictures or in our like show art once. Remember that one where we were like,
oh, yeah.
Anywho, and remember when we did the AI art and it was the MoMA thing and
yes.
Kind of see our faces there, but not really, because one of them does look a lot like me, not so much like you for some weird reason. Yeah, so I'm going to see how did this get made. They're coming to Glasgow and I'm really excited about it, but the downside is I have to watch a Gerard Butler film and he's like the worst person ever, so I'm going to need to watch that next week beforehand. It's called The Ugly Truth. Did you know that's what they were doing? I told you that, didn't I?
Yeah, you sent me it.
Oh, God.
I'm assuming they picked that because they were...
It's because he's from Paisley, but what I learned...
They Gerard Butler, which is...
No, they've took the piss out of Gerard Butler before because he's made some really bad movies. So I guess because Gerard Butler came from Paisley and they're coming to Glasgow, that's why they chose a Gerard Butler film. And also that Craig Ferguson's in it. And he shows up talking in a Scottish accent, apparently, and it puts Gerard Butler off his American accent, so he can't handle it and tries to go back and he phases in and out of his Scottish accent. Which his Scottish accent's terrible because it's sort of like Americanized. I hate that. Hi, I'm Gerard Butler kind of thing. I can't do it. It makes me cringe. you know, like Scottish people have been in America too long, and they sound just weird. I don't like it.
They're all just
Sheena Easton, she's another culprit of that, like talking in an American accent when she's from fucking Bell's Hill. One of the roughest. Well, Paisley, I don't know if that's, is Paisley a rough place? I mean, who else is,
it depends where you're from in Paisley. I think Paisley has quite a reputation of being rough, but like the posh bits of Paisley are very posh, like big ass, very expensive houses.
What's the name of that guy who sings New Shoes?
Paolo Nutini.
Paolo Nutini, he's from Paisley. Manny Mary lived in Paisley. I mean, and I visited and it seemed fine to me, but then I didn't really wander around Paisley too much. I often visited it. It was only like at Christmas time. And I went there once to go to Paisley Town Hall, which sadly I think has been closed, the museum, Paisley Museum, and I always wanted to curate there. It's been shut since the pandemic, and I'm like, why? It was a great wee thing. It was a great wee place. It had lovely things in it. Anyway, if you're thinking of, if you're one of our Crystal Myth listeners and you're thinking of going to Paisley, it's got a cathedral which has a gargoyle in the shape of a xenomorph from Aliens.
Yes, it does.
Does it have another thing as well, or is it just a xenomorph? I think it has a few Easter eggs in it. Or is it just Xenomorph? So I was thinking maybe it had like a Predator one, but it would be cool if it did.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like in my head it's just a Xenomorph. And I did used to live up the street from it, so...
Did you?
Yeah.
Where? Well, yeah, I don't believe you.
In Paisley for... When I taught in Paisley for...
Oh, right.
I lived there for a year. I didn't live there the entire time I worked in Paisley. Okay. But when I taught in Paisley, I stayed there for a year.
What else Paisley famous for? It's famous for its Paisley shawls, its textile industry, the Paisley pattern, if you're a fashionista out there. It's a sort
it
of
is famous
thing.
For like acting and stuff, like not Gerard Butler, but
Gerard Butler.
Got loads of youth theatre, like insane amounts of youth theatre and youth theatre productions and youth theatre companies and stuff in Paisley. It's very
Where does James McAvoy come from? I don't think he was from Paisley. Oh, what's that strange clicking sound? That's it's gone. It's the ghost of Paisley. It's saying stop talking about it.
The ghost of Paisley's past.
Stop talking about it.
Is right, James McAvoy from Paisley? There is definitely another really famous actor that's from Paisley as well.
Wait, well, we could look up Scottish actors from Paisley then. I'm going to look up where the fuck's James McAvoy come from then. James... Someone just tell me. James McAvoy... Where is he from? He was born, it just says Glasgow. Oh, very good. It just says Glasgow, Scotland. You need to tell me whereabouts. There's too many silence here. Hello, you need to talk.
I'm looking up celebrities from Paisley as well. Paisley, because it's annoying me that I can't remember. Gerard Butler, Tom Conti.
Tom Conti, yeah. He was in Shirley Valentine.
Phyllis Logan, who I've never heard of, but she sounds cool. Mark Rowley.
Don't know.
McIntosh. John Bell, who was in Wrath of the Titans.
Never heard of him.
I mean, I've never heard of him, but Wrath of the Titans is a cool film.
Is it? Well, I suppose it's a mythological film, isn't it? So, like, yeah, we should enjoy that movie. Oh, my God, where is he from? Where is James McAvoy from? John Hannah was from East Kilbride.
Yes, because he's really good, like, was best pals in school with Caroline that we went to school with, parents.
He was raised in Drumchapel.
There you go.
James McAvoy, there you are. Okay,
one of the actors from The Vampire Diaries is from Paisley. Although I've never watched The Vampire Diaries, but yeah.
Never have I.
But one
and I won't.
Paisley.
Nor do I care to.
Oh, Stephen Moffat's from Paisley.
Is he? The writer of Doctor Who?
The writer of Doctor Who.
Does he write? No, that's another guy, isn't it? Queer as Folk. Is that a different guy?
That's the other Russell T. Davies.
Yeah. And did Stephen Moffat take over from Russell T. Davies, I think, with Doctor Who, and then he left. Anyway, we're just...
we're going to continue to list off Paisley actors. One of the people that's been cast in the new Star Trek series that's being produced just now is from Paisley.
Okay.
18-year-old Martin Quinn from Paisley.
On yourself.
Yep. Go you, Martin Quinn. Bravo.
Yeah, but is he going to play Scotty? Because that would be really cool. He's what?
Oh, no, he already... Sorry, I was like, he's playing the lead role. No, he's not. He was playing a lead role in a theatre.
Ah.
A production of... Oh, I've Let the Right One In. Okay, that's quite cool. I'm a fan of Martin Quinn. So he was the lead in the theatre show of Let the Right One In. And somebody from the Star Trek production company saw him when the play was on in Dundee, which is weird that the people that are making Star Trek went to watch a production of Let the Right One in Dundee. And invited him for casting, and he's playing one of the lead roles in Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
He's got to be Scotty.
Must be Scotty if he's like about to turn 19.
Because Strange New Worlds is about...
Prequel, isn't it?
It's about the original, it's set during the original series timeline. Where, you know, Captain Kirk became captain of the Starship Enterprise, it's basically run by Pike, Captain Pike, and Spock's in it. So it stands to reason that, I mean, I hope to go, they're going to cast an actual Scott as Scotty for once.
That must be who he's cast as. It doesn't
That's really exciting then, because I stopped watching that. I need to get back into it, because I really like the guy who plays Spock, because I'm in love with Dr. Spock. No, not Dr. Spock. He's the guy that does like the special skills for children. Is he a doctor in Star Trek? I don't think he is. Lieutenant Spock?
I don't know.
I do love Spock. Does Spock have... Is he just Spock? Does he actually have any other names other than Spock?
Is his dad Spock? His mum's human. No, his dad's human.
His dad's called Sarek.
Okay.
What's his mum's called again? I was going to say Helen, but it's not. Shit, I should know her name.
Margaret.
Margaret.
His mum's called Margaret Smith.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I love Star Trek. The original series is the best, and Spock is, the one that I like the best. But, yeah, it's exciting if he's been cast as Scotty, because most of the time it's... Well, who's played Scotty? A Canadian guy who does a really bad Scottish accent. And the guy in... Oh, what's it called? I'm so old.
Spaced guy.
Yeah, him.
Spaced the spaced guy.
The guy in the Mission Impossible films and Shaun of the Dead played Scotty. And yeah, not again. He played them more as a glad... Well, I mean... I think Scotty was supposed to have been from Dundee or Aberdeen or something, up that way. I don't think he's traditionally from Paisley or Glasgow, but that's the way that he was played in the last films. But
yes.
Who cares? I mean, it wasn't an actor who was an actual Scot, so it would be great if we could get someone from Paisley to play Scotty in Star Trek Discovery. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that, if that's the case.
It's our main and most important takeaway, other than Lord is a sea monster and we love Mayor Winningham from this episode. We've learned a lot in this episode.
Check out Mayor Winningham. All right, well, thanks for listening, Crystal Miffers, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with Dreamwalkers. Not Moonwalker. Don't watch that movie. It's really disturbing. I mean, Michael Jackson turns into a car. Why? We just don't know. Is it so you can speed up and catch up with kids and capture them?
That was my assumption, yeah. I'm like, you can fit at least 5 Waynes in a car.
And drive off with them. Yes. All right. Bye.
Bye.